Hang on to your radios, folks. It's 2 hours of civil rights wandering your way. Bathrobes Piers Broadsides, October 11th, 1999. Tomorrow is Happy John Dine Death Day, the anniversary of the killing of Happy John Dine by Officer Connor Carey. Tonight and today we're having some special events on the air. We have a rare appearance by Councilmember Christopher Crone, expected to call in 15 minutes to discuss ongoing issues, shoulder tap, Dolphin Lee, who knows, borders, CPRB, you name it. We've got a series of interviews that may surprise you, so stay with us. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. My producer has aptly corrected me. It's November, folks, not October, but it is November 12th tomorrow, and that is indeed the anniversary of the death of Happy John Dine in the still uninvestigated shooting, which left him on the sidewalk bleeding to death, two bullets from the gun of Officer Connor Carey. Our new police review board has not seen fit to raise this issue and to reinvestigate it, or indeed to even press vigorously for its own independent investigation of the May 12th events. And we're going to be looking at that because on Tuesday, the City Council met in closed session and again, apparently, reaffirmed its city attorney's treacherous decision to keep this whole matter under wraps. One wonders who was whispering in his ear and whether the individual had a badge and a gun. Certainly, one wonders who's been whispering in the city council's ear, and perhaps we can get some information on that when Christopher Crone calls in. Certainly, there have been no public statements by people on the city council defending the CPRB, Citizens Police Review Board, in its decision to hold an independent investigation, independent of the police department, which means very little unless it is open to the public. A secret independent investigation seems almost to be a contradiction in terms. And there's also the added problem that the police department doesn't seem to want to cooperate even with a secret independent investigation. And as far as I know, no police officers have been identified in the matter of May 12th. And for those who don't know, that was police went way off the beam when they went after protesters at a May 22nd demonstration in front of the Loudoun, I've got to catch up with myself, the McPherson Center on Front Street, in a protest that was a strong protest against the bombing of Yugoslavia and an event held there where Representative Sam Farr was sort of the milch cow host headliner. And he has also been the individual who supported that bombing all the way from A to Z, in spite of his sort of occasional bows and curtsies to his liberal pals here in the district, suggesting an occasional bombing pause, but actually backing up every one of Clinton's appropriation requests and giving essentially a blank check to President Clinton to bomb and bomb and bomb. And now, of course, we have ethnic cleansing the other way. But the CPRB and should be allowed to investigate the issue of how police acted on May 22nd. And indeed, they waded into the crowd, began arresting people, it seemed like almost indiscriminately. They grabbed one person, and when that person was freed by the crowd. They grabbed another person instead of going after the first person. And there's still some charges coming up on this that they, the police, have levied. One would think, I think, to essentially justify their own behavior. Instead of having a sit-down with the protesters in the community and saying, look, we all have to consider how to live in this community, how to work together, even if we have different points of view, instead of acknowledging they've made errors and trying to look for public input and how to change, then the police department, of course, closes ranks in rank fashion and proceeds to charge those, criminalize those, who it has abused. It's a classic process. You see it in Los Angeles, you see it in New York, and you see it in Santa Cruz. And it's really kind of an unfortunate thing. And we're going to be talking about that tomorrow, for those of you who are interested, and as well as being the anniversary of the death of John Dine. And there's, I think, going to be a little ceremony. I'm not sure. I believe we may get a phone call on that later in this evening at the what we call Happy Corner, the corner of Front and Soquel, in front of what was Coast Commercial Bank. I think it's got another building there right across from the New Leaf parking lot. That's where Dine was shot, right at that bus stop. And again, the circumstances of that are pretty frightening. All non-police witnesses say that he was shot with nothing in his hand, nothing pointed at the police, no combat stance. All the claims made by the police chief and the district attorney were contradicted by every non-police witness, and none of them were essentially confirmed. But the Citizens Police Review Board 2 years ago, a somewhat different board, but many of the same people are still on it, essentially said to the police department, you did just fine, you don't need to be independently investigated. They actually found something else. They found significant discrepancies, but they didn't criticize the police department for those discrepancies. They just sort of ignored them. They said he was reaching for a weapon, the man who was shot, Happy John Dine. Anyway, we're going to talk more about that, perhaps, and other things. We really have a bunch of stuff that we want to get through here on the show. That's the Royal We. I'm talking about the program. And tomorrow is also, just as a quick announcement, a day where at Dominican Hospital there's going to be a 4 hours of hearings on the issue of changing the civil commitment law in what may be a very ominous direction. That's 3 to 7 tomorrow. Give a call to 423-HUFF if you're interested in this situation. We have an incoming call. Let's see who's on the line.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. It's Christopher Crone.
Hey, Christopher. You're a little early. Glad to have you.
A little early, but I have to pick up 5 minutes at the end.
Okay. Well, let's roll with it.
Let's roll.
So you've been involved in a number of controversial issues lately. You've been kind of upholding, who knows whether it's the minority view on the city council, but it may be the majority view in Santa Cruz, for all I know.
Let's hope it is.
Indeed. Let's talk about the shoulder tap law. This is an ordinance which essentially criminalizes a minor asking another person to buy her or him a beer, although we already have ordinances that say if a minor gets somebody to buy him a beer, that's criminal behavior for the adult and also for the minor to receive the alcohol. It's criminal for a minor to buy a beer at an outlet. It's criminal for a minor to possess a beer. Why the push at this time by the police department, and is it in fact coming from the police department, for this new ordinance?
I personally am not sure why. So, but I mean, it's a lot of things. I tell people, and I've said this probably to you, but and to probably some people who are listening. But mm-hmm. the council seems to me, after being on the council for a year, is a reactive body, meaning it. Not reactionary, although Robert and I might disagree on mm-hmm. that, but a reactive body, meaning the citizenry brings things to the council, and the council deals with it, basically. There's been just a few things initiated by council members since I've been on the council, and they usually have had to do with things outside of Santa Cruz, such as like what passed the other day about Tibet, and what was going on in Mexico with Mitsubishi having a salt plant in where whales migrate to. Those sort of global issues are a lot what council members bring to.
Well, certainly when you were elected last year, you had a number of issues on your mind that you probably wanted to bring forward and still do, right?
Yeah, several of them I've been successful or at least moderately successful in bringing forward. And I think there's a few others. I mean, what comes to mind is campaign finance reform, which was shot down by the previous city council, which would, you know, be voluntary spending limits by council candidates.
Mm-hmm. What about, let's say, the issue of rent control? This is something that, of course, Bob LaMonica has been pushing to put on the ballot as a kind of.
I'm going to turn this radio down.
Sure, go ahead.
It's kind of getting in my way here.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
LaMonica has put this on the ballot, or I hope hopefully will be putting it on the ballot if he has enough signatures. The initiative he's got is rather, you know, it's sort of an advisory initiative. Some of us are thinking, why doesn't the council just take the bull by the horns? I know you're a landlord yourself, but I think you probably have some sympathy with tenants. Do you favor significant rent control here in Santa Cruz, Chris?
I think that the rent situation is out of hand in Santa Cruz and has been for a long time. I have not, and I've been waiting for it sort of this period to close of, you know, gathering signatures and such. And a lot of times, being the body the city council is, when the stuff comes to you, that's when the study session begins.
Right,
I have not scrutinized the current rent control initiative that's
out
there.
Sure, no, I'm not talking about that initiative.
I can't.
I'm just talking about rent control generally. I mean, you're familiar with rent control.
I think we have to respond to people, to the many people. You know, this is going back to the late 70s and early 80s when the last couple, maybe there was three rent control initiatives. I know there was two that were defeated and one only by 50 votes. That it's still there and it's been there, and because of the housing market that I guess started taking off in 92 and most recently, and we're seeing the end of that, or at least
there's a huge increase in the rents, as both of us know. I mean,
yeah,
it
has to do with the housing
years.
Market and,
yeah.
and houses, you know, going for absurd amounts of money. And California's always been like that from the beginning of it.
I mean, you have people like Rotkin and Sugars, as I understand it from secondhand information, they haven't talked to me about it, but saying that they favor rent control. And with you and one more, that would make a majority. I mean, if that is the case, why do we have to wait till March to get, or actually be till November if this Metro controversy description is accurate, that it can't go on the March special elections ballot, have to wait till November? Don't we need to give renters relief now?
I agree. I think we do need to give renters relief now. I think we need to give a lot of different groups of people, and renters being a lot of folks that are in that group, some relief. I think it's such an issue that will be determined and I think perhaps should be determined at the ballot box before the council acts. I think something like this should get on the ballot and have people respond to it. What happened last time was the folks who...
Doesn't that mean waiting a whole year of seeing more people thrown onto the streets, more profiteering? I mean, to me, I guess I just got back from San Francisco today where I was up there, and one of the most vigorous movements that's happening is sort of a reestablishment of the kind of strong resistance to the illegal, well, not illegal, but certainly immoral, maybe illegal, evictions of masses of people under this new, what is it, the Ellis Act, the state law that allows vacancy decontrol, where if they can just raise the rents once a person has moved on, and suddenly the rents go up, there's a huge, what's called kind of a eviction defense network, and massive protests are happening up there around that.
Not a good thing, but that was handed down, I guess, by our past governor.
You're talking about the law, yeah. But I'm just saying, here in Santa Cruz, we have the people with the progressive labels on their foreheads, you know, sitting in the council seats. Why can't we get those people to act like progressives and take an action that is a very simple one, which has to do with rent control? Yeah, you might be voted out. Yeah, it might be voted down. But at least during that period of time, the issue would be raised vigorously. People would get some measure of protection. What I'm saying to you is, would you favor, could you conceive of favoring introducing a rent control soon rather than waiting for a November election?
I think, you know, you might call it safe, but I call it, it prudent, and also having a wide discussion in the community that when there is an initiative that does get voted upon, people have that discussion, and people are forced, for good and bad reasons, to choose one or the other, to choose, you know, to go ahead and say, yeah, rent control is a good thing, or it's not a good thing, or
how about a city council?
Why? And it's a very complex sort of issue, and I think that's something that that the council probably, I think, shouldn't initiate themselves,
how about
because
a city?
There's such, you know, divisions within the community on this issue.
Well, how about a city council initiating a study of the effects of rising rents on people, comparison with rents and wages, some kind of a council study session that would give us some indication of how this has been changing in the last decade, and give a real strong factual background to any such discussion in the public.
I believe that would be a part of the rent control issue. I'm more than willing to.
Would you like to initiate such a thing, do you think?
To talk about that. Yeah, I think it's relevant. I think it's a good thing. I think that actually that type of information is the one that we need to look at and bring forward and make known to people what those issues are.
Let's skip now to another subject because we haven't got much time. Dolphin Lee, these are two apartment buildings that suddenly the city council has made its highest priority as a site for developing affordable housing, when these people, that, as far as we know, that live in this apartment, and I haven't spoken to every single one of them, I haven't been down there myself recently, but there was the clear understanding that you have several hundred Hispanic people are going to be evicted, given $125 a family, and expected to live on that per month in this. Again, it seems like a sort of one of these leftover plans from the beach Third Street realignment business that we voted out, not in, last year. Yet you on the council, and I'm not blaming you because I think you were one of the most reluctant votes, but strangely enough, or perhaps not so strangely, Mayor Byers flipped this matter right onto the front burner, even when Councilmember Rotkin, who had been a big kind of booster of the Third Street realignment last year, simply said, let's have the beach area as our high affordable housing priority. No, said Mayor Byers, we want this particular project, which is going to result in the eviction of hundreds of people into circumstances where they can't possibly get affordable housing, given the Santa Cruz situation. What are you prepared to resist this, or is your vote actually going to stand as a continuing thing? I mean, are you interested in seeing this project go forward, or are you interested in seeing these people be protected? What's your situation on this?
It's a huge issue, as you know, Robert, and if you look at the documents presented to the council, there were several projects that were presented to the council, and many statements or several statements made by council members concerning with respect to the two properties that you're mentioning, the Dolphin Lee property. I think that the most sort of the strongest statements were made about relocation, and I think that this is an incredible issue, touchy subject, doesn't have a good history, and I think council members are extremely sensitive to it.
Sensitive to it, but they vote 7-0 for it. I mean, one wonders if this sort of in-house affordable housing monopoly group, the single source provider, Mercy Housing, isn't pulling strings here. I mean, don't you feel like your strings are being pulled in this issue? I mean, has really fair and full consideration been given to the other options?
I think there's a history there, Robert, of Mercy Housing participating in this process, a very good faith process. I don't think they're making huge amounts of money. At least the people on the ground that I talk to who work for Mercy Housing are very good people, and they're people who want to see more units. They want to see rehabilitated units. They want to see people who necessarily can't afford it in the
Doesn't
difficult
Mercy Housing,
housing market in Santa Cruz.
Right, but don't
be able
they
to afford
don't
a house
they don't they then
an apartment.
Don't they then? I understand it's a 15% commission they get, which is up from the 8% commission and that other groups get in other areas. But again, I'm not an expert on the subject. I also understand that they essentially get title of all this property after 20 years or so, or 30 years, rather than, let's say, other groups, which like a land trust situation, which it would be held in perpetuity by the tenants. I mean, it seems to me there are numerous other solutions. This one suddenly being rammed down the throat of the council without any call from the neighborhood. That I haven't seen people in the streets demanding this. I haven't heard tenants coming in or heard any testimony from them. Have you? I
mean, in fact, the first thing the first priority of the council has to do with some apartments along the river. I believe it's on Blaine Street.
But you see, I'm talking
about the
money
from the council went toward securing that housing, I believe,
right,
is about 90 units.
Right, but the really the large
for permanent affordability.
Right, but the largest amount of money, not federal money, because you're quite correct. That is the largest total sum of money going. But the largest amount of city council money, as I understand it, if you look at just city money, is going to this $4.8 million project. But whatever it is, it's a huge project. and it's a lot of money going into this. And I'm just saying.
And again, you know, that Mercy Housing that you mentioned, the group that you mentioned, acts as a consultant to the city. Currently, they're on, you know, it's no secret. The documents are all public. They're on a $60,000 a year retainer, meaning that they work with the city council in trying to figure out housing. You know, where can we place affordable housing, and what are the obstacles
they have an interest
and the parameters
in this?
Of it?
I mean, aren't they both the consultants and also parties who have a certain financial interest? I mean, isn't there sort of a conflict there?
I don't, you know, not to my knowledge that they have a financial interest. I do know that the way they secure housing is just by selling bonds, and people buy into this type of thing. When you say 20 or 30 years, that hasn't been set in stone yet about how long the affordability is going to be. But these are the type of housing, you know, that it's not just Santa Cruz.
I'm not even talking about the affordability.
Like, you were speaking of San Francisco before. San Francisco also engages in projects like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I'm not even talking about the affordability, Chris. I'm talking about the actual ownership of this property. As I understand, and I could be wrong, it reverts to Mercy Housing after 20 or 30 years, that they get the property and the housing, as well as, you know, the fees along the way. And I'm not saying that necessarily that's a bad project, but
They manage the project, and I think that their track record is good in Santa Cruz. I don't know about other places unless you have some information about other places that they've been known to screw up in, but I've seen them in Santa Cruz. I'm pretty impressed with Sycamore and Narrow Lagoon projects, which they manage currently.
It's just I haven't seen a public discussion of this matter in a forum where the opponents of the project, and I'm thinking of the Bears, and I'm thinking of people like Scott Graham and other, and the Beach Area Working Group, a lot of the people who helped elect this council think this is a really bad idea, and even the people
we've had two public discussions at the Beach Flats Community Center. We've talked about it at the council, at two different council meetings.
I disagree. I don't think
you have some ideas on how to...
hasn't been done as an issue, Chris. I mean,
you have some ideas on how to get the word out, on bringing people out, say, hey, this is going to be discussed. Y'all better be there.
Obviously the way to do it would be for you to announce you're going to have there's going to be a forum at which you're going to speak on the issue, and invite other people to come and speak yourself and talk about the issue if it can't be done at a council session.
We did that twice at the Beach Flats Community Trailer.
It wasn't done in terms of the specific Dolphin Lee project, and the whole business around the final decision, which was made without public discussion at that last session, although you did have a kind of a series of public discussions about general alternatives, but no specific discussion of Dolphin Lee pro and con in a public forum. I still believe that I haven't heard that discussion. I heard suddenly buyers coming up with this rather, you know, out of left field idea, let's go directly for this project, and of course she can slam dunk it because she has her four votes, and she runs away with the scene. And I can understand a person like yourself trying to, you know, you made a lot of comments, hey, let's not rush this, we don't have the documents, I know you wanted to try and go get them. But the fact of the matter is a lot of people are really kind of concerned and upset that it hasn't gotten a public process, it hasn't gotten it doesn't come from the community. It comes from some planners at the center.
I think the council is very sympathetic and
if they were sympathetic, why would they be passing it 7-0?
The public process, and I think there's a lot of advocates on the council for affordable housing, and I think that we're headed in that direction.
Well, there are people who like to use the word.
Affordable housing is an incredible issue, an incredibly difficult issue. Where you put affordable housing, how you talk about it, and I really believe, from my heart, that this council is sensitive to all of those issues and trying to conduct itself and the process in such a way that is sensitive and listens to all the different constituencies that are involved.
I wish they did, and I'm sure. I mean, I think that if you tried to say that to a straight face to your group on Monday, they'd laugh at you at the Pergolesi. But let me ask you this: this is, I guess, I don't want to keep you a longer. I know you're rushing.
No, I got to go in about 2 minutes.
Let me ask you about the thing that's very important to some of us: the independent investigation. I know that you have been trying to get this into an open situation, but Barisoni came up with an opinion that closed it down. I think probably with some police department pressure and suggestions, came up again on Tuesday at the closed session. What's the status? How did it go? You talked about it for about an hour?
We did talk about it in closed session, and I believe that, you know, our city attorney is citing a law that is a state law that has to do with the police Bill of Rights, whether the police are going to participate in an investigation or not. I think the council members are, I speak for myself, I'm very concerned about the one, legitimacy of the investigation, the results of the investigation, and if they are become public or if they're private, you know, what's the credibility of our police department and of the CPRB in the face of the public, and how that's all perceived.
Sure, a closed investigation.
And I believe that this current council came in wanting to really get some accountability. I think we've got some really good people. We may disagree, I don't know, about who the current appointees on the CPRB. I think they're pushing as hard as they can. I mean, they're working really hard. I personally think Arnie Leff is a great chair for the CPRB. I think that he wrote a tremendous letter to the council recently and outlined the issues.
Right. Now, the question is, what
did the council?
What did the council do with that letter is my question.
To see, you know, to see.
Are you going to open this investigation
say whether
up?
What we should do, he asked for a few different things. You know, he asked for that we make clear that there's legal help available, that from an attorney that has specific knowledge of CPRB issues.
Hopefully, someone other than Barisoni.
He wanted us to conduct a meet and confer with the Police Officers Association to get them on board and to find out possibly why they won't participate and what the extent of that is, and try to figure out if there, you know, what is it that would maybe get them to participate in this independent investigation process.
Mm-hmm.
And that there be some resources also attached to all of this, that we fund, you know, have some more money in the investigation for this additional attorney who is familiar with CPRB.
Did the council
issues.
Vote to do this?
There's a third thing that he asked for. It had to do with, oh, I can't remember now. Trying to get people who haven't been, I guess, cited. Well, it's an incredibly difficult issue, and I'll grant it to you that I see coming out of this is...
Chris, what was the council's decision on those 2 points, do you know?
Well, the council decision was to go through with the process and to then ask CPRB to come back to the council with changes to the ordinance that the CPRB is guided by.
In other words, they're rejecting the idea of an independent counsel? Paying for an independent lawyer on this issue?
No. Evidently, and you probably know this also, there is a lawyer that is attached to the CPRB. She happens to be, at least from what I had heard...
She is horrible. Go ahead, though.
Yeah. On maternity leave.
And
thank goodness. So that was going to be looked into, and whether we need to get somebody else if that's the case, and if not, then what's going on with her at the present time.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we need to go through with this process, and I think it's a good example or a good way to figure out what's wrong with our ordinance. If there's something, in fact, wrong with our ordinance, come back with some changes in the ordinance for the future, because you have police forces out there like Richmond, like Oakland, like San Diego, like Berkeley, who do actually have police officers who testify, and that my thing in this is trying to bring some sort of community police involvement together in all of this. On the other hand, I also think that we should have independent investigation, which means that it doesn't have to necessarily go through the IA or the Internal Affairs Department of the Police Department.
Sure.
Process.
We agree. Chris, tomorrow is the anniversary of the shooting of Happy John Dine. Last year at this time, you and Keith Sugar spoke at a memorial at the town clock for stolen lives, concern about the police officers who the victims of police officers. Are you going to be at the corner of Front and Soquel perhaps tomorrow between 5:30 and 6 to light a candle for John Dine?
I think I'm going to miss that this year, Robert.
I was afraid of that, Chris. I think in the answer to your question as far as how can we proceed to get the police and the community together is you have to have a situation of equal power. And in order for that to happen, people on the city council have to stand up and encourage those people who have concerns about the police department to bring them out in a way where they feel they have some kind of power and voice. And unfortunately, given the current Citizens Police Review Board situation and given the city council's lack of strong support, I take it you didn't really support independent counsel at this time, that you are supporting you being the city council, supporting the keeping the investigation closed. Is that the story at the moment?
I think there's a lot of support for for the CPRB on the level of the council. I think that there's...
Investigation, Chris. Is it going to be open or closed? That's the question I have for you.
I think there's a lot of support for an open investigation in the city council. I think that the process we have right now, the ordinance that we're under, the rules that we're guided by, make it more difficult to have the open process that you or I might want to have.
Not according to the city managers and city attorneys of other cities, and even John Crew of the American Civil Liberties Union of the North.
It's not that it can't happen. It's how our ordinance is written currently, and how our memorandum of understanding or MOU with the police is currently. And those issues have to change too. And I think the council is aware of that. And I believe changes will be forthcoming. But at the current, the current investigation, it's going to be difficult to make those changes, being that we just signed a new MOU with the police, and we have to do this meet and confer process, which...
That has to do with the police officers showing up, but it doesn't have to do with confidentiality, at least in terms of open or closed process. What I'm concerned about is that the city council either stand aside and let the board do an open investigation, as Diane Christensen wants to do, she's the independent investigator, or actively endorses this project. And my fear was, what I heard last week was you guys, after 8 minutes, decided, nope, go with the city attorney's opinion, keep it closed. Now, has that changed? Am I wrong about that? I know you had an hour's discussion, so perhaps you came up with some new information.
Again, I already said what I said, and I got to go.
Hey,
so
I appreciate your...
I will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Christopher. Appreciate you taking the time.
Take care.
All right.
Bye.
Well, there's a man who said what he said. That's Christopher Crone, council member, and he's spoken to us for 25 minutes. That's more than certain other council members. Here's a person calling in on the phone. What do you think? Did he cover the issues properly? You got some things to say about it? Give us a call here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Gail Levy.
Yes.
I'm the president of the Cabrillo Estates Mobile Homeowners Association.
Ah, Gail, I believe I heard you're having a rent problem, at least in terms of a landlord problem.
Well, we have several different problems surrounding the rent as well as the landlord. Most of the people here own their homes, but rent the land that they're on.
Mm-hmm.
And Capitola is currently facing the possibility of loss of our rent control, which would be devastating.
Now, give us a sense of what kind of rent control currently exists in Capitola for mobile home people.
They are limited to, I believe, 60% of the consumer index increase that's a yearly occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
So once a year, we do receive a minimal increase in our space rent.
Mm-hmm.
It's reasonable, and for the most part, it's tolerable. People who have lived in the park for many years, which normally are people on a fixed income, their rent has not gone up significantly in the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
If we lose this, then the sky's the limit, and the space rents could easily be equal to space rents in Marin, which can be as high as $1,000.
And what is your average rent, let's say, in Capitola?
About $250.
Wow. And how about Santa Cruz?
Santa Cruz, I think it's about $350 on the west side.
And they don't have rent control in Santa Cruz?
They don't have rent control. That is for some of the smaller parks.
Mm-hmm.
There are parks that have rent twice as much as that.
Mm-hmm. Now, Gail, how many people does this affect in Capitola? How many people live in Capitola trailer parks?
I really don't know how many mobile home park owners there are in Capitola.
Mm-hmm.
There are several mobile home parks tucked away. Most of them are fairly small.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them are owned by the people. But when you have a landlord that lives out of the county, it does become more difficult.
Mm-hmm. And that's your situation?
Yes.
So how long have you lived in this park yourself?
A little over 2 years.
And when did problems begin to develop?
In this park in particular, they've been problems that were long-standing, even going back to the previous owner.
Mm-hmm.
The current owner purchased this park in early 1997, I believe.
What's the name of the park?
Cabrillo Estates.
Cabrillo Estates, okay.
The sewers were in horrible condition, the whole water system, electrical, very old and dangerous. The streets are in terrible condition now. Very little has been done there have been some re-landscaping projects. The streets have been patched, but it's very inadequate, and they're completely crumbling now.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the water problems have been improved, but not resolved.
How many people live in your park?
There are 69 spaces
mm-hmm.
in this park.
And you have about, what, that 69 families, you would say? Or?
It should be 69 families, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the owners are asking that the second homeowners would be exempt from rent control. That's saying that anyone who owns a mobile home strictly for vacation purposes would be completely exempt from rent control. Sub-rentals, which are illegal in all the parks, they're asking that they be exempt as well. The only instances that anyone could find of a sub-rental occurring was when the park owner themselves owned the home and was renting not only the home but the space to an individual on a sub-rental basis. They also wanted to be able to pass through expenses for capital improvements. Our current owner has flatly refused to repave the streets until this passes so that he can pass through the $100,000-plus it's going to cost to repave these streets.
Now, is this a Capitola City Council decision? Or
it is.
And what's the likelihood of the council supporting the landlord?
Right now, we have two council members that we can count on and three that we cannot. So it's going to be a huge struggle.
It's a council of five people?
Mm-hmm.
And how about the solidarity in the trailer park itself? Do you have a lot of people on board?
Unfortunately, in our mobile home park, our meetings have been very light. This weekend, we're planning on going door to door to really pass the word and to get people involved and at least to have them sign a petition so that they can be properly represented to the city council.
Mm-hmm. When's the next city council meeting?
On the 18th of this month.
The 18th, and what day is that?
I believe it's next. I don't have a calendar right in front of me.
Today is the 11th, so it would be next Thursday. That's the 18th.
And there's going to be a good turnout.
What time is that council meeting?
7 o'clock.
And where is it?
At the City Council Chambers in Capitola.
Are you inviting the Free Radio Santa Cruz listeners to come in and support you?
Oh, certainly.
And is there a number that they can reach you at if they want to, like, do some organizing or get some more information between times?
Sure. It's 476-6871.
476-6871. 6871. 476-6871. And we're talking to Gail
Levy
of the
Capitola Mobile Home Owners Association.
Capitola Mobile Home Owners Association.
I just read that off of a piece of paper. It's Cabrillo Estates Mobile Homeowners Association.
Oh, Cabrillo Estates. Okay, let's get that again. It's the Cabrillo Estates Mobile Homeowner Association?
Yes, it is.
And again, Gail, your phone number for those who want more information?
476-6871.
6871. Is there more you'd like to say? You have some thoughts you want to pass on to the Free Radio audience? And can you hear us out there or not?
I can't. I don't have the correct antenna.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's actually, who knows, if you had a huge antenna, you still might not hear us. We're only 40 watts here, and you have to be in Santa Cruz often, although occasionally you can get us outside Santa Cruz. Certainly there are people in Santa Cruz, and perhaps even some people in Capitola who can hear, although we don't reach your natural constituency of folks, you know, who would perhaps call into the Capitola City Council. Do you have a number people can call to the Capitola City Council to express their concern about this issue?
That would be the regular City Council number, which I don't have in front of me right now.
Mm-hmm.
I called on a last-minute basis.
I understand.
My two cents worth.
Yeah, I got a call from Merlin, who has, of course, been a Free Radio broadcaster in the past and who is a tenant in your trailer park. And I tried to call him back, and I wasn't able to reach him, so that's the reason we haven't talked before this. I'm glad you called the show, because, you know, you're talking about a real, it sounds like an important situation. We were, in fact, talking about rent control with City Council member Christopher Crone before you called in.
That's what Merlin had indicated to me. And when you say a trailer park, it sounds like you can pull your car up and hook your home and go find another place to live.
Quite right, yeah.
You sure can't. My home is 1,200 square feet.
So that you can't just sort of wander on down the road with your home.
Sure can't. I have to have two flatbed trucks and a crane. So it's not simple. It's incredibly expensive. I'm a single parent. I have a 14-year-old son, and I work for a living. It would be very impossible for me to pick my home up and move. I'd have to sell. And if the park owners get their way, I'd have to sell at their price.
Now, give me an idea of what's likely to happen if rent control is gutted here in the trailer park. I should say in the mobile home park.
What would happen as soon as the owners could make it happen would be that people would be forced out of their homes. The rent would be increased at such an outrageous rate that it would be unaffordable. People would then have to sell their homes. No one would want to buy a home that had a $1,000 space rent or even a $500 space rent on top of a $700 or $800 mortgage. People can't do that for something that's supposedly affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And that would force you to sell to the owner, who would then be able to convert the park to whatever they wanted to.
And is that the real motivation here?
The motivation certainly is to increase their instant gratification profit. They're complaining that they are not getting a fair return on their investment. They're disregarding the fact that the dirt they purchased is going up in value astronomically. And if they choose to turn around and sell, the $2 million that they paid can be $4 million that someone else will pay.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the same case with the people who own the homes. You may have purchased your home for $25,000 to $80,000, depending on the size and the age, but you're not going to be able to sell for $100,000.
Because?
Or $200,000, because it doesn't, the value doesn't go up that fast.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly does go up, but not as fast as the dirt.
The land that they allow you to
the
park yourself on.
The land that they're renting us, teeny slivers,
mm-hmm.
that we're responsible for once we're paying them for it. And they really have us, if this passes through and they are allowed to do what they choose, they have us in a stranglehold. And Santa Cruz County is unaffordable as it is. Rent control is needed throughout the county.
Yeah, I think that's what we've been saying here as we've been talking to Councilmember Crone, trying to get him off his butt to actually do something at the council level on that issue, and it's, of course, a Sisyphean task, as we might say. Gail, again, let me give out your number so folks can get in touch with you if they want to more information before the important Capitola City Council meeting a week from today at 7 o'clock, I guess, at Capitola City Hall?
Yes.
And is this an ordinance change? Does it take two readings, or is it just a simple action that will happen at that Capitola City Council meeting by a majority vote?
This is a proposal by the group of landowners. They have banded together, and they're receiving funding from mobile home park owners, not just throughout the state, but through several western states. People in Honolulu are involved in this. And their coalition is dedicated to tearing down all rent control as far as they possibly can in California, at the least.
Have you talked to Bob LaMonica? Have you heard that name before?
I have.
And have you had any words with him on that issue? He, of course, is the one who's distributing the rent stabilization initiative here in Santa Cruz.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, he's been successfully churning out the petitions and getting people to sign, and he's actually, if you read the Metro Santa Cruz, you'll see a little blurb about him on page 9 or 10 or 11 in the news, NEUZ section, where he thought the city attorney had told him that there would be an election in March if they get their 3,700 necessary signatures to put it on the ballot. Now he's told it's November, and there's some concern there. He actually sometimes speaks on our show, too, and so I will mention to him that you called. I want you to give me your number one more time.
476-6871.
Mm-hmm. 6871.
This is just the beginning of the fight. It's going to be at least 6 months before it gets to the point where they will actually vote on it. But once the wheels are in motion, there's a huge danger that the residents of Capitola are going to be at risk.
So there isn't just a week, you have more time.
No, we do have more time, but we need to make our point very quickly and very strongly that we can't allow this to happen.
Well, Gail, I think you've made a beginning here, and if you want to come on the show and actually field some calls, that would be good too. You should probably give me a call off air later tonight or tomorrow. We can talk about it more. And in the meantime, I think you've, you know, well, at least made an initial presentation as to what's cooking in Capitola on this issue. I think a lot of us just had no idea.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Hey, thanks for coming on and giving us some words about another attack on, what do you call it, affordable housing, you know.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And this is your harried host here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. We have another phone call. Whoa.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, it's Merlin.
Hey, Merlin, how
are
you doing?
I was just listening to you talking.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, since you're receiving to me, but I got an antenna hooked up to my receiver here.
That's good.
Listen, I got some phone numbers from city council members in Capitola. People want to call them up.
Go for it.
Okay, Tony Gallardi. He's out of office come year 2000, which is pretty soon. His phone number is 475-2217.
You know, I got a better idea than all that because people may not have pens and paper. How about you give your phone number, and then if people want, they can call you directly and take all these numbers from you.
Well, I give you a different phone number. It says each city council member has voicemail. You can send a voicemail message to the council person by calling the city number 475-7300.
475-7300 for
yes.
The voicemail. Voicemail of the Capitola City Council.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is true that, you know, like my mother's on a fixed income. She gets about $600-something a month, and if the owner wants to raise the rents here to $500 a month, most of the owners of mobile homes in this mobile home park, Cabrillo Mobile Home Estates, cannot afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And what he does is he buys the mobile homes real cheap from the people, like way under market value, and then he puts in a manufactured home, and then he sells that. That's what this guy does.
Hmm.
That's what the owner of the mobile home estates, Cabrillo Mobile Home Estates, does. He buys it cheap and then puts a manufactured home in, then sells that. So basically, he's raking it in, man. He's all for this no rent control stuff. Because that'll afford that, rather than, you know, him going to people saying, you want to sell your mobile home or offering them a low price for their mobile home, they'll be forced to sell their mobile homes because they can't afford the high rents. So it's kind of like a racket, man.
Most of these landlords have these ongoing rackets and they're, of course, supported by the government and other big associations. It's a pretty nasty situation.
Well, this is really a strike against the people in Capitola big time, especially disabled senior citizens or any senior citizens on a fixed income. This is really a bad thing, man.
I hear you. Well, I appreciate your pointing Gail our way, and as I was telling her, I tried to get back to you, and I got a busy signal at the time, and I'm glad she called in, and I'm glad you called in. Is there more you want to say about it?
Yeah, what she was talking about was $100,000 for road repair. What he wants to do is pass that fee on to the mobile home owners, mm-hmm. and it's his damn mobile home park, you know?
Well, you know, you got to keep the slaves on the plantation, son.
Well, that's, you know, I don't think, you know, I mean, this guy... If he's going to fix something and his mobile home, that's like the landlord fixing something, then charging you that they fixed it, you know, in your house.
It's, yeah, it's a, in fact, one of the problems that I guess tenants in Santa Cruz have is if they try too vigorously to assert their rights, they find themselves evicted. And if you get evicted, unless you can prove it's a retaliatory eviction, you can't do shit, so to speak, here in Santa Cruz. And I guess that, I'm not quite sure what the rules are regarding mobile homes, but it sounds like what protections you have, they're trying to attack at the city council level.
Yeah. Well, I was also, this is on a different fork of the road here now.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to you talk to Gail and mention that Merlin was, you know, used to be a DJ.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm still a DJ, man.
You're still a DJ.
I'm still on Tuesdays from 4 to 7.
Oh, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon, Merlin.
I got KS Lounge coming in.
So you are
premiering a new CD Tuesday.
So you're the man, 4 to 7, I guess. You see, I'd seen that your show was struck off the radio live.
Well, no, there's another one up above your head, another calendar, and it's on there.
Okay.
So that's a mistake where it was struck off.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad that you're back on board.
Yes, I'm happy to be back, too.
Well, welcome back, Merlin.
Right. Thank you, Robert.
All right, sir. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, that's it. Just hope people listen in Tuesday night to my show and call in the Capitola City Council members,
475-7300. 475-7300.
Voice out there against this, you know, raising the rent, that they're for rent control. We need it bad.
Support the people, not the landlords.
Yeah, this is desperate. This will really put a lot of people in the streets, man.
Well, thank you, Merlin. And, keep your voice up on this one. Appreciate your doing it.
Okay, thanks for letting us on here, Robert.
All right, man.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And there you have it. It's screws are tightening all over. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 is what you're listening to, if you're lucky enough to be with us. Studio phone line, in case you want to call in and talk on anything either that you heard Gail speak on, Merlin speak on, or Christopher Crone speak on, or you got your own thoughts, 427-3772 is the phone number here. This is Bathrop Spears Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor. We tend to focus a lot on police misconduct and homeless issues, but we also are concerned about just the general crackdown on people who are struggling to survive. And that's you and me most of the time. Here's another call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert.
Hi.
This is Dennis, the Camping Menace.
Ah, Dennis Ream, if I'm not mistaken.
How are you?
I'm good, Dennis. I should introduce you. You're a man who has gone to court, what is it, 13 times now for a single ticket for sleeping in your vehicle? 14 times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you got to work pretty hard to get the record here, but this is certainly, you're racking up the times.
Yeah, and it's going to be longer. I just got the decision in the mail.
Yeah, I saw the decision myself. We actually looked at it at the Homeless Issues Task Force Subcommittee on Legal Matters last night.
Last night? How'd you get it yesterday?
I got it from Peter Lehman.
Oh, did you?
Your attorney. Yeah, the decision we're talking about, folks, has to do with what a person who gets a so-called sleeping ticket in a vehicle after he or she is found guilty has to do. And in the past, certain very knowledgeable activists and vigorous activists and principled activists, Dave Jacobs, Linda Edwards, Robert Flory, evolved what's called the FEJ, Flory Edwards Jacobs Defense, which in essence is based on the idea that the crime, sleeping in a vehicle, is an infraction. It's also what's called a non-vehicular infraction, even though you are sleeping in a vehicle. It's a municipal code, not a vehicular code offense. And that means that if you're found guilty, according to this reasoning, you cannot be forced to either do jail or to pay a fine or do community service. You can, however, of course, they can assess you the fine, and they can garnish your wages, and they can find civil process for getting the funds from you, but you cannot be forced to pay the fine on threat of jail, because there's no code section that allows that to happen. If you, for example, have a vehicular fine, however, you would be forced to do it. There is a code section that allows them to do that, but not for municipal codes. And I guess
even though those vehicular codes are still infractions.
Right, even though they're all infractions. And I guess this was brought to Judge Art Danner in Department 5 about 2 months ago by your attorney, Peter Leeming.
Six.
Right. Five is attic. He's next door. I'm glad you weren't in there. And he kind of seemed to be kind of leaning your way, saying, well, the code says what the code says. But now apparently his decision says, well, it isn't convenient that the code says what the code says. That would certainly make it more difficult for the courts, and therefore bend over and take a deep breath.
Well,
you can give us your own words. What's happened with this decision?
Well, the judge has basically quashed the warrant, but he says the warrant is still legal, so it makes no sense. He double talks right in his own decision.
And what you mean by quash the warrant is, in fact, what's happened is you've refused to pay this. I guess initially it was a $162 fine. And you said, you know,
I've had two warrants issued because I didn't pay it.
So the warrant went out saying failure to pay, and you went in and said, this is not a legitimate warrant because it threatens to arrest me on what is essentially an infraction. And a judge in the past, I guess he wasn't a judge, he was a referee in one of the...
Yeah.
He threw it out. It
was Patterson.
Patterson, the referee in the basement of the county building, threw it out saying, no, that's, you know, you can't... You're right, you cannot issue a warrant for an infraction ticket. And you came back, and this was your second time in court with Danner, or was this your third time?
I don't know, I'm losing track.
Yeah,
but it was
second or third time.
It was at least second or third time in front of Danner.
The warrant.
On a second warrant.
This was the second warrant, and the warrant...
Even though the first one was quashed.
The first one was quashed by Patterson, but then they issued another one, and you said, wait a minute, am I going to have to do this all the rest of my life, run around trying to get these warrants
mm-hmm.
quashed? So you went to Danner and said, please, A, quash this warrant, and B, make sure no more are issued, right?
I didn't ask him please. I said quash it because under 1205 they can't issue it.
Right, 1205 is the penal code section that that says that
this warrants will not issue for failures to pay under infraction or an infraction.
And for some reason Danner couldn't read properly, or what was his problem?
Yeah, because he even says in his decision here, the very last sentence on his decision says, the warrant previously issued will be recalled in this matter, which means it's quashed. But up a little, two paragraphs previous to that on my decision that I'm holding in my hand, it says a bench warrant was issued on March 31st, 1999, which in essence was and shall be considered an order to show cause why the fine cannot be paid. So he's saying two different things right there.
So he's quashing the warrant, but in essence he's setting you up for warrant number three, yeah?
But he's saying this warrant is issued and can bring me in front of the court, which should be considered an order to show cause why it cannot be paid. So what this tells me is that when we were at court at our last court date, Danner and the public assistant city attorney Candotti were sitting there, and they were both complaining about, well, we don't have any way to get anybody in the court if we can't issue warrants. So Danner said he'd issue a decision on the 26th of October, and I didn't get it within that week. I figured something was up. Evidently, Candotti and Danner must have sat down and figured out, well, we're just going to issue warrants anyway, and then when they come in, then we'll just say, well, can you pay, or are you going to pay, or what's the story? And if not, we're just going to switch you over to community slavery.
I guess I thought of that the other day when I was in court, and I saw a man who was in his orange pajamas, the garb they give to a prisoner who's been arrested, jailed, taken, you know, held in lockup, and then the next morning taken into court in these pajamas, and he was there for a failure to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I guess what I'm wondering is if what you may have to do is find someone who gets arrested on a failure to pay something like a camping ticket, because there are some circumstances. I mean, failure to pay a misdemeanor or failure to pay a vehicular infraction is a crime, you know, and therefore that those warrants properly issue in those cases. But in the case of these kinds of infractions, the sleeping ban, apparently they don't, by the clear wording of the penal code, and the Attorney General's opinion is pretty persuasive on this. So perhaps what we need is a civil rights lawsuit taken on behalf of a person who's actually in jail, or who has had to suffer a day or two in jail because of this. Get ready to go to jail there, Dennis.
Well, no, I'm having my attorney appeal this. We're going to take it out of Danner's hands. We're going to go higher with it.
And Peter Leeming will appeal it?
Yes, he asked me yesterday what I wanted to do with it, and that's what I told him I wanted to do it, so that's where we're going with it.
What's the timeline on that one?
I think it's a 90-day time limit to file the appeal.
But aren't you planning to leave the area? Won't
you
be gone?
I'm going to be gone for about 90 days, so.
You'll be back, huh?
Yeah, I'll be back.
As the Terminator put it.
Yeah, sometime, beginning of March I'll be back.
So have you been sleeping in your vehicle?
I've been sleeping in my camper where I have it stored.
And so that's not, well, you probably are violating the camping ban. Would you like to give me the address so I can send a police officer over?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, well, why don't you call me off air and I'll call Sergeant Seeley and see if we can get him over there. Is there more you want to say on this issue? I'm frankly, I got to tell you, I was going to say I told you so, or no way they're going to let you do this. But I guess you got this kind of split decision. They dumped the warrant, but they said we can do it whenever we want, which is completely contradictory.
Yeah,
so.
In the decision that I'm holding in my hand again, it says, well, it's clear that a person cannot be imprisoned for non-payment of a fine. There is authority for the court to issue a warrant for the purpose of requiring a defendant to show cause why it cannot be paid. And he cites 1205 Penal Code, subsection B, but that's not in there. And so my attorney agrees with me that he can't switch me over and force me to do community service, as they put it, when I've already said I won't do it at the time when I was found guilty. And I was given the opportunity at that point then to say that I would opt for paying the fine, which I changed my mind about.
Well, you know, I still think this is a viable defense, even though it sounds like Danner is, you know, playing, you know, hop back and forth on different feet.
Well, he and the city attorney don't know what to do with the damn thing.
But
so
the problem is, I think most people are listening to this conversation don't know what the hell we're talking about, because it does require you have the documents in front of you. We're talking about a way to say, fuck you to the sleeping ban, and it's a very important kind of argument.
Because you cannot be jailed for the infraction, you cannot be jailed for the failure to pay on an infraction, so they are threatening people through extortion. When I say that, I mean threatening them with jail when it's not a legal possibility through the issuance of warrants.
Are you willing
in order to get money out of them.
Are you willing to advise people, Dennis, as to how to proceed along this road if they give me a call and I pass them on to you?
Well, I'm not going to be here, so I'm leaving in about 2 weeks.
Well, you better write your flyers fast so we can pass them out.
I'll write something up for you.
That's great. We're talking to Dennis Rehm, a notorious sleep criminal, a man whose vehicle is an instrument, an implementality of the crime. Anything you want to add, Dennis, before I call the officers?
Just tell them... I'll see him in court.
Sal, thank you very much.
Okay.
Hey, Dennis, good to hear you.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you're listening to the Musicless Free Radio Santa Cruz, at least for the moment. We'll attempt to cue up a little relief for you soon. I know the endless blather of these voices can be quite annoying after a while, but hey, I've never had so many phone calls back-to-back, one after the other, and I'm always pleased when that happens. We do have some good tapes, and it's going to take me a little while to get them together. I'm going to begin, unless I'm interrupted by another phone call, which almost always takes priority in my book, with a look back at the Police Review Board's Monday hearing. The Santa Cruz Citizens Police Review Board is a sort of a fig leaf group that was created in 1994 by the City Council, sort of a Byers Kennedy production. With Rotkin Matthews and the whole gang jumping on board along with them. It gives the semblance of review and sort of placates those who are asking for review. It didn't really placate the people who wanted real oversight of the police. But it's essentially a toothless board, and it's been there for 5 years. And some of us had the illusion a year ago when new board members joined the board because of the city council elections in last November that there was going to be some real changes, just as some of us had the illusion that there was going to be a change in the criminalization of poor people and the right to sleep would be guaranteed for